It is my pleasure to introduce again Kevin Grover. I don't remember what I said yesterday, but he got his PhD in 2010 from MIT. He was a postdoc at UC Berkeley until 2012, and since then he's been a postdoc at AITP. And since last year, for the last year, he's more foundation postdoctoral fellow.
Thank you for the introduction. Thank you for being here. Let's just get started. So this is the title of my talk. There's a figure on here by famous painter Asher, and it will become clear why I put it there later. Right now it just looks good. So let's just start. So what this talk is about? Let's remind ourselves of one very basic fact which we sometimes forget. It's all pervasive, but it's good to remind ourselves that equilibrium statistical mechanics actually is one of the most basic foundations of physics. It's in when we study, for example, condensed matter systems or quantum field theory, or even string theory. People generally work within the framework of equilibrium statistical mechanics, and its foundations were laid long ago. This is from one of the first papers, 1863. And it's where this equation was argued. So it comes up as a surprise that this very basic foundation actually breaks down, and very dramatically, in fact, in generic, strongly disordered quantum systems. And this phenomena, which this breakdown goes by the name of many-body localization. And this talk is about, the main message would be that quantum entanglement helps resolve some basic puzzles that arise when statistical mechanics breaks down. And I will focus on the phase transition between these two regimes where statistical mechanics works, like most things, you know, and a regime where it does not work. So right at a boundary, what happens? That's the topic of this talk. And of course, please stop me anytime. This is a seminar. Please ask any questions anytime. So this is the outline. So let's remind ourselves of what is statistical mechanics in quantum and also in classical context. So let's start from just classical statistical mechanics. So I have some Hamiltonian, which is a function of coordinates and momenta. So these are just numbers. This is statistical mechanics, so these are just numbers. These are not operators. And the way one way to understand the whole of statistical mechanics in classical context is to work with what is called microcanonical ensemble. So this is an ensemble where you fix the energy. So let's say energy lies between a thin shell, E to E plus dE. So this is a phase space. So energy is constant over this blue shell. One postulates in statistical mechanics that systems which are so-called ergodic systems are those where all microstates are equally likely within this shell. So that's the definition of ergodicity, that microstates within a given energy shell are all equally likely. And this is all of statistical, this is the only assumption. After that, everything that you have ever seen in statistical mechanics follows. For example, your usual notion of temperature and so-called canonical ensemble arises from this. How it works? That you take a system at a fixed energy, let me call it capital E. So there's some closed box which doesn't interact with anything else. So its energy is fixed. And look at a subregion A of this box. And I divide, so there's a complement of A, this is A bar. And I ask the question, what is the probability of finding energy E sub A in region A, given this constraint? And how do you do that calculation? You just refer back to the assumption, the fundamental assumption that all microstates at a given energy are equally likely. Once you have made that assumption, this problem of finding the probability is just a counting problem. You ask how many of all those configurations have energy EA in region A. So you can just do this counting, and this is the answer you get. The probability is E to the minus EA over T, where T is uniquely determined by how many states exist at this temperature, exist at this energy, and T is just dS over dE. S is a number, log of number of states, and DSDE is just inverse temperature. So this is called canonical ensemble, and even in classical statistical mechanics, this is an interesting conclusion that a subsystem of a closed system looks thermal if you assume ergodicity. So this all reminds at least me of the notion of quantum entanglement, because you're dividing system into A and A bar, and I'm not use the word entanglement, but you're doing very similar calculation the way you do in quantum entanglement. And that gives you some insight into generalizing all this that I mentioned so far to the quantum domain. So let's go there, so-called quantum ergodicity, or this goes by the name of Argent-Hayes Hermitian hypothesis. So instead of working at a fixed energy now, I work at a fixed energy eigenstate, which is the analog of having fixed energy in quantum mechanics. So I take a eigenstate at a finite energy density. So it has energy which is proportional to the volume. So that's how system knows about that it's at a finite temperature. And so these are the two statements of ergodicity in quantum mechanics. The first statement is that expectation value of any correlation of any operator with respect to a single eigenstate psi equals its canonical ensemble. It equals its canonical expectation value. So this is the equivalence between microcanonical ensemble and canonical ensemble, which is exactly analog of statistical mechanics which I just talked about. So this is the first thing, and you can ask what is this temperature beta. You just solve this equation by setting O is equal to H. So there's a unique temperature beta for a given eigenstate. And sometimes I will denote this temperature as a subscript on psi, for example, here. And this is the second statement, that the entanglement entropy equals thermal entropy. These are the two, let's say, parts of this hypothesis. And what do I mean by this? So look at this system, a subsystem of this total system. Look at the entanglement entropy of region A with respect to A bar for this wave function. And the claim is, of this hypothesis, that it equals thermal entropy density, which is this little s thermal, at temperature beta. Beta, as I mentioned, is fully determined by solving this equation using this method, times the volume of region A. So entanglement entropy equals thermal entropy. So I will use it again and again throughout the talk.
Doesn't the second one just follow from the first one?
It does not. Because entanglement entropy is...
Because you're saying that the effective density matrix for the subsystem...
Right. So I will discuss that later, when it does, all those questions come about. Because O is not a... entanglement entropy is the expectation value of a state-dependent operator. It's expectation value of log of rho. So one has to be careful with state-dependent operator.
I'm not saying but it looks like the first one is saying that the effective, that the...
You're correct. I mean, that's right.
The subsystem is the entropy.
Right. But here not specified...
Then its entropy is the...
Right. But not all operators satisfy this equation.
Oh, no. Suppose I'm saying one implies two.
If you assume all operators satisfy, only then this implies this.
Yes.
But we know all operators don't. I can easily find operators which don't satisfy this. So you can't derive this from this, that's why.
So then one is an incomplete statement.
Exactly. So I want to make this precise later. That's the second part of my talk, which operators satisfy this equation. So right now I'm just being, let's say, agnostic on that, which let's right now assume just local operators and their correlation functions. I will come to later part of the talk will be how to generalize it to non-local operators. So let's keep it independent. At the very least, I'm not over-assuming something. Maybe I'm under-assuming. I'm not overstating something. Let's keep them separate for now. I think they are related for the same reason as you mentioned, but one has to be careful with which operators satisfy which don't. So this was first proposed by Deutsch in 1991, these two statements. In fact, the second statement was actually discussed more in this much later paper in 2009, but at least this first equation was discussed in these two papers. In fact, the funny part is this also shows up as I came to know through Misha Fogler that this statement is actually a footnote in Landau-Lifshitz. But that's one part, but. So let's look at how to, just as a demonstration of this entangled entropy equal thermal entropy. So here, just take some spin half system on some lattice. This is a particular example I take. Let's set hx is equal to hz is equal to some 1, for example, if you like. Take them to be non-zero numbers. And look at an entanglement between this region and this. And this is the demonstration of that thing, that each blue dot here is the entanglement entropy for, so this is entanglement entropy of all eigenstates. Each blue dot is for one eigenstate. It has 2 to the power L number of eigenstates, so these are all of them. And this is the entanglement entropy density. I normalize it because I want to compare only thermal entropy density so that things are intensive. So, and this red curve here is the thermal entropy density. So you see they match pretty well even in a small system. It's a very good agreement. So this statement also goes by the name of volume law of entanglement entropy. That entanglement entropy for finite energy density states scales as volume of subsystem. This is in contrast to very well-known area law for ground states, or in general, area law for zero energy density states. Even if it's not a ground state, as long as energy density is zero, for example, first excited state or low-lying states, we expect it to have area law. So there's a big contrast between these two class of states. So far we have argued, okay, there is finite energy density state, which most likely certifies this volume law entanglement entropy.
I have a quick question. So here, do you know why there is this magnetization as you go to the edges of the So if you look at this curve,
right.
It seems to me that there is a systematic deviation as you move.
Right. So the thermal correlation. So the error bars are determined by the thermal correlation length, the ratio of thermal correlation length to the total system size. So when your temperature is going to zero, your thermal correlation length is becoming diverging, in fact. So you expect actually order one deviation close to, you know, any finite size effect will be determined by L over thermal correlation length.
Right.
So clearly,
yeah, so
right. Yeah, so for CFTs, people have calculated these things. This is not a CFT, so it's hard to do any field theory calculation directly. But in principle, you can write down some 5-4 theory and start calculating things if you know the parameters in that theory. So it's doable, but it's just for particular cases you can do it.
So maybe you get back to that later, but I just realized the question on the one back. So that one you said that there are operators for which that statement is not true.
Right.
But is that statement always true? In other words, is there always exist a beta if OE is a Hamiltonian?
I did not follow the question.
Is that statement always true? You can find an effective temperature whenever operator OE is a Hamiltonian?
I think so. So the rough intuition is that if you plot entropy density versus energy density. So entropy density is just log of density of states between say E to E plus dE. And what you are saying is that it has some curve, and then you the way you find beta is that you suppose each point here essentially comes from set of eigenstates, nearby eigenstates. You just draw the derivative here. So that's the temperature. So that's a geometrical way of seeing it. So you can always draw these derivatives. Of course, it's possible you have some weird systems which, instead of convex, you have concave, some function. And that happens sometimes in long-range interacting model, like first-order transitions. So then you can have, in fact, more than one solutions to this equation. But as long as your specific heat is positive, which is the fact that there's a negative curvature, then there's a solution. So as I advertise, okay, this is an interesting hypothesis. It's supposed to hold for perhaps most ergodic system or all ergodic systems. Or in fact, it's a definition of ergodicity in some sense. But it turns out there is a now recently discovered system, this strongly disordered system, where it actually breaks down, which is what breakdown of structural mechanics is, quantum structural mechanics. So this is a regime where I'm talking about. So I have some electrons on some lattice. with some random chemical potential. So chemical potential oscillates as a function of position, the lattice size. And it was long ago argued by Anderson in this very famous paper that electrons become localized in random potential. And that actually leads to breakdown of ergodicity. But this is a free system. We are interested in generic interacting systems. So that's when that happens, that's called many-body localization, as I will discuss now. So the question is, the first question we ask is, are these states ergodic when you have this disordered quantum system? And as I just mentioned, the answer is actually no, but let's see how it works. So let's study the single particle eigenstates for this Anderson problem. So this is single particle density of states versus energy. What you find is that all states are localized in 1D and 2D, unless you have some special symmetries. But in the absence of some special symmetries, it's 1D and 2D at any disorder. All states are localized in three dimensions. Also at strong disorder, again, this is true. But if you are weak disorder, then you have some mobility edge in single particle states. So let's ask the question, what happens at a strong disorder for many particle eigenstates? Because this eigenstate thermalization hypothesis I mentioned, that is for many body eigenstates. So you want to translate all the single particle intuition to many body states. So let's do it. It turns out if you do that, it trivially follows that all eigenstates, all many body eigenstates of this disordered quantum system actually have a area law entanglement. So this red line here. And the intuition is that all single particle states are localized. The way you construct many body eigenstates is the Slater determinant of these things. And if all single particle components, they are localized, if you calculate Slater determinant, it will continue to just inherit all the properties of single particle states. So basically, single particle, the many particle wave functions look like this. They are Slater determinant. So the density of, if you look at the probability of finding an electron, it shows up as these spikes in the plane. There are very few places electrons can be. Essentially, wherever there is an impurity, wherever the chemical potential is very negative, electrons just sit there. It doesn't move around. So that's why it looks like even the excited states look like ground states. There's not much fluctuations.
Even in the localized phase, for instance, in 3D, when you have a mobility edge?
Then you don't have this picture. When you have a mobility edge, because you will have some fraction of states, when you form a Slater determinant, you will always have some fraction which come from delocalized. And that's enough to delocalize. It's not fully delocalized, but at least some component of that gives you some movement. So if you have a Slater determinant, where a finite fraction of the components in this matrix are coming from some delocalized, some other kind of localized. If you calculate the entanglement entropy, I believe it'll be volume law. So I'm in this regime, where all states are localized. So this is a very dramatic breakdown of ergodicity, that all eigenstates satisfy area law, which is surprising, because generally we grew up thinking that excited entanglement entropy looks like thermal entropy. So, and there it's complete violation of that. But this is a very special system because it's a free fermion system. So what happens when you add interactions? Because that's generic. And free fermions, all kinds of things can occur. It's an integrable system. So let's add interactions. And as originally claimed and argued by Basco, Lange, and Altshuler, using very beautiful arguments, even in this system with interactions, as long as the disorder is sufficiently strong compared to interactions, many body states remain localized. And the rough intuition is that you start from let's say just this part, the blue part, the non-interacting part of the Hamiltonian, and then eigenstates at a given energy density, they look very different from each other because system is localized, eigenstates at a given energy don't have similar character. So there could be one eigenstate, there could be another eigenstate nearby, and this gap is e to the power minus volume, as in any many-body system, and they have very different character because they're localized. For example, this might correspond to some orbital, this might have contribution from orbitals which are localized here, This other one may have contribution from orbitals which are localized very far away, but they have the same energy because of random chemical potential. And when you add interactions, they don't mix with each other because their character is very different. If you do perturbation theory, if your matrix element for this quantity are very small, then it's ineffectual. So that was a rough intuition, and one can make it precise as these guys did. And later, John Imbri actually argued it very, very, very rigorously. And then this statement is correct. And there has been huge amount of work, numerical work, which substantiates this picture. All right. So,
If you have electrons and have one of our interactions.
Right. If you have long range interactions, then you can delocalize, for example.
So is it known for one of our potential?
I don't know any exact calculation on that.
Do you have any question about what happens?
I would think the longer range interactions, the more likely you'll be delocalized. For example, let me give a funny example. You're probably familiar with random matrix theory. In random matrix theory, people work with Hamiltonian where there's no locality. You're just random elements. And it's like infinite range models. But they are completely random elements. So you might have thought they might be glassy, actually. Why is not a random, the eigenstates of a random matrix always many-body localized? And I think they're My intuition is that they are not localized, even though they are, each element is completely random, is because they are, you're not putting locality. So it's infinite range long. So it's, yeah, so there's some.
But it's not known which.
People did calculate. I don't remember on top of my head. There's some work, a Princeton group, where they look at different exponents and try to predict at what value of long interaction you will delocalize. But okay. You can do these things mean field level. And I'm sure at some level. What I've written here is general dimension. And this is a belief that this is a calculation. The first paper that they looked at was, they did not really assume really what dimension they are in.
Why should I believe that belief for high dimension? Because I think 1D, I completely agree with these arguments. But in 2D and 3D, there's a lot of competing orders.
I think competing order is not the issue. Question is whether system has, I mean, you can have, for example, order parameter within many-body localized space. That's not the issue. Issue is whether higher dimensions tend to be less localized even in single particle case. So probably just need stronger disorder. That would be my guess. I mean, you don't have to take, this is not my claim, as I mentioned. This is claimed by these three guys. I'm just taking it because, almost on face value, because if you look at their argument, they're heuristic, but they are pretty sound, if you look at their.
Yeah, but so the point is, the impression is order one could be much smaller than the other planets, like Hawking and the Intuit. So what's the crucial rule for this impression?
No, but you just found that a variance of this term is much bigger than this term.
Okay, so the second term.
Yeah, that's a regime you are in. That's strong disorder. If you don't believe this holds in higher dimensions, it's completely fine. What I mean is that part of the thing I will be talking about also applies in 1D and higher dimensions also, but you can just take those rules and think it only applies in 1D if you think higher dimensions doesn't work. I mean, it's just fine with me.
Yeah, because 1D is naturally strong impression. Very strong typical 1D system because the quantum fluctuation extremely strong in low dimension. But in 2D and 3D, I think.
No, in fact, by your intuition, then in 1D it should be less localized if interactions are more important. It's other way around. But what you're saying is contradictory because if in 1D interactions are strong, then you would think 1D system will be less localized because it's interactions which are delocalizing the system. But anyway, let's just move on. I don't think what you're thinking is more like ground states, it's excited states. So people have been asking how to realize these things in experiments. In fact, this paper came out just very recently, where they took a cold atom system and they actually realized a Hamiltonian which is similar to this. And they gave a proof of principle that you can realize these things in experiments. It's an interesting experiment. I'm not saying it's all done, everything is settled, but it's a very good start. So this is a disorder. This X is a disorder. There's interaction, and they find when disorder is very strong, if I prepare a system with certain kind of pattern, let's say every other site is filled, and then I do quench, then I evolve with Hamiltonian, you find that strong disorder, system retains its memory. Initial the pattern looks very similar than what you started from, even after evolving. On the other hand, when interactions are dominating over disorder in this regime, you find that system basically become more homogeneous at long times. So okay, there's some interesting experiments here, and more work will be done, I'm sure. But it's a field which is, I think, there's an interesting interplay of experiments, theory, and numerics. So it's an interesting field to be in. So this is.
Was the point there that it's not approaching some equilibrium?
Right. So the point is that.
How long does it go on without?
Sorry?
How long does it go on? Do you believe, or is it believed, that it would never approach equilibrium, or it's just?
Yes, that's a belief.
No.
If I take, for example, the exact results known for 1D, you can repeat this experiment in the strong disorder limit, and you can argue that as long as, I mean, you can evolve things. So what are the time scales? There are three rough time scales. There's L, rough time scale for thermalization, but I mean by that when entanglement entropy roughly becomes thermal entropy. Then there is time scale e to the power L, which is the inverse of the level spacing. And then there is a time e to the power L, which is Poincaré recurrence time. And the belief is that you basically, entanglement never becomes equal to a thermal entropy if you evolve even up to this. I mean, it does something like this. It becomes some number which is much, much less than thermal entropy. And then it will come down at Poincaré recurrence time. So it will never go there.
Right, but the other question is your question one. In other words, does the effective state of the system become approximately a constant, even if it's?
It could become.
Even if it's maybe
non-equilibrium
state or something.
It's possible there's some plateau here, which is some non-equilibrium physics, but it's clearly out of equilibrium because it never becomes thermal entropy. So is there some interesting steady state? Perhaps yes, and I don't understand it, but there might be some kind of interesting Plato, and the physics in this regime might be some interesting out of equilibrium physics. But it has signatures. It retains main point is this physics retains memory of the initial condition. So people have, if you start from a different initial condition, what you will get here is different. That's a claim that at long time system retains memory of what you started from, unlike in generic thermalizing systems. So I don't know how I'm going very slow, but we know. Okay, I have half an hour. Okay, not enough, but with this. So this is the many-body localization phase diagram. So this is very interesting phase diagram. I'm pretty sure you have not seen anything like this in any conventional condensed matter system, because it's a phase diagram as a function of energy density and disorder. So what I mean by energy density of eigenstates. So let's take one of these Hamiltonians and look at its spectrum. The understanding is that, or at least the claim based on various numerics is that, and heuristics based on all the Vascular and Altshuler, that a low-lying states up to some finite energy density have area law entanglement. Very high-lying states above this critical energy density have volume law entanglement. So as a function of energy density for a fixed Hamiltonian, you go from an area law eigenstate to volume law eigenstates. So it's a phase transition as a function of energy density. All transition that you have ever seen, like paramagnetic to, let's say, paramagnetic transition is also like this, but here it has no signature in thermodynamics. So that's the interesting part. And in all those other transitions, everything is volume law at finite energy density. So if I convert this back to here, at very, very strong disorder, as I said, all states are delocalized. somewhere here. I mean, all states are localized somewhere here. And when disorder is zero, all states are delocalized, this pink color. But somewhere in between, some, as I'm showing here, some states are localized, some are delocalized. So this, at this right at the edge, that's where my interest lies in this talk, that what happens at a many-body localization transition? At this energy density, what is the nature of eigenstates? And I don't know the full answer, but I will try to make some exact statements about it using some general considerations. So that's the question. And that's why this figure was there. Think of this green reptiles, as Escher called them, are like delocalized. Inside you can see they can't really move. They're like etched in some paper. And right at this one is what I'm interested in this talk. All right, so.
So what's the support for that there is this edge and it's not just like a vertical line?
It's numerical. It's numerical. It's vertical line sounds very, let's say, fine-tuned. There's no symmetry reason. Whenever you have something zero, it has to be some reason, and there's no symmetry in the problem. From disorder going to say minus disorder or something like that. So, I don't see why. So as I already mentioned, this many-body localization transition is interesting because there is no signature in thermodynamics. So if you look at thermal entropy density as a function of energy density, it's completely smooth function. So there are states which are many-body localized, which you only detect by looking at entanglement entropy, not thermal entropy. So it's completely smooth function. That's what people believe, and I think it's correct. So you can think of it like a quantum phase transition at finite temperature, because it's a phase transition at finite energy density, which is sort of like finite temperature in a closed system.
So I don't understand. You have the thermal entropy going down as the entropy.
Right. So it's an artifact of lattice models. Any lattice model that you've ever seen will have negative temperatures. Like, let's take Ising model. It will always have this branch. If you like quantum field theory, this energy density is like your lattice cutoff, essentially. It's like, you will never access this part. So that's okay. I mean, that's what it is in an actual lattice model. So that's what we are concerning. Mm-hmm. If you don't like this part, it's fine. I mean, many-body localization exists even in this part. So we don't have to. What I mean by that is that it's, even in quantum field theories, one expect all these phenomena to survive. So where only these two parts will show, this and this. So that's okay. So I'm interested in the question, is there a possibility of a continuous many-body localization transition? By that I mean a transition where there's a diverging correlation length. And I'm interested in this question because continuous transitions often have some universal features about them. There's some notion of that the long distance physics is generally not supposed to depend on microscopic details. There are something which are more general. So that's true for all known continuous transitions. So that's why I'm interested in this question. But as soon as I ask this question, you run into you start getting a bit headache because you notice that one side is area law entanglement, other side is volume law. So if you look at the coefficient of volume law, it jumps. So it looks like a first order transition at first sight. How can it be second order to begin with? So in MBL phase, this is zero, exactly zero, because it's the area law entanglement. Other side, its coefficient is order one, and it's equal thermal entropy density at this energy. So we know that number just from counting. So volume law coefficient jumps, so okay. Let's just proceed. Let's not leave the whole project right here. So what is the order parameter for this transition? I want to use actually entanglement entropy as the order parameter because that's the most dramatic outcome of many-body localization, that entanglement entropy is area law versus volume law. But it actually has even more benefits compared to, for example, conductivity. So conductivity is also interesting because conductivity is non-zero in the ergodic phase and zero in the many-body localized phase. So it matters, okay, why don't I use that as order parameter? So maybe to this audience, I don't have to advertise entanglement entropy as a useful thing, but it actually, in this case, there are actual extra benefits over conductivity. For example, anti entropy is not limited to systems where there are conserved laws. Conductivity requires having some conserved quantity, some U1 charge or something like that. So, and second point is that entanglement entropy is less sensitive to rare region effects because it scales with system size. It's like area law or volume law. So it is less sensitive to things like if you do disorder averaging of quantities which are order one, which don't scale with system size, they're often weird features. For example, a typical state will have different value versus a mean versus typical are very different when you have order one quantities. So it's called Griffith's phenomena, and conductivity is often sensitive to that. And there are other things here, you can read them, but those are the two main points I want to make.
What do you mean by phase condition here? You mean it's a property for a Hamiltonian with some condition parameter, or it's different?
This, I'm interested, so think of fixed Hamiltonian, you're going up in energy density. Low-lying states, as I mentioned, are many-body localized. High-lying are not many-body localized. At the transition, there's some energy density. You can ask those wave functions, what is their nature? That's the meaning of phase transition.
But that's very different from the usual definition.
It's exactly the same. So let's take a microchemical ensemble, ferromagnetic to paramagnetic transition. If you do the exact diagonalization of some system which has phase transition, you will find low-lying states are ferromagnet, high-lying states are paramagnet. There is some critical energy density EC at which you will have critical eigenstates.
Yeah, but in this example, if you add a perturbation explicitly break global symmetry, then there's no friction that's a crossover. So how do you see this feature in this energy density part?
If you break the symmetry explicitly?
Yeah, because when you're talking about friction of friction, it's a property of a Hamiltonian class, not a specific Hamiltonian.
Yeah, this is also a property of a class of Hamiltonian, which I wrote down here.
Yeah,
no, that's the whole point, right, of this talk, that this is a phase transition which cannot be described using usual language of symmetry breaking, and that's why I'm using entanglement entropy as a useful tool.
But do you have any constraint for the Hamiltonian? You can add arbitrary perturbation or
you can add anything that you have, that anything you like, as long as it's a local term.
Okay.
So
it's just like a topological
description. Yeah, in fact, you should worry about this, right? You should. What you're asking is saying that the usual transitions are useless to study. This is a transition you should always study. That's the message you're getting. Because useless transitions, I mean, the usual transitions, you can add some term and get rid of it. But I'm saying this is even more interesting. Because this transition, you can never get rid of by adding some term.
It's something like a topological phase transition.
I don't know. Why should I use this word topological? I mean, I don't.
Because you want to make it analog. So in the symmetry breaking phase.
No, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't want to use these words. I mean, I think we should not throw a word just for our convenience.
It's fine, but it's just the precise definition.
I defined a setup. So there's an energy density at which transition occurs. You can add any term in the Hamiltonian that survives. So it's all well defined.
But your claim is that even at the arbitrary perturbation, this feature will never vanish. It's always.
That's what people find. So I'm taking it as a numerical input, if you like. But there's no reason to not believe it, because you go through the whole argument that Bhaskar and Altshuler did. Just to make sure, Hamiltonian has no symmetries to begin with.
Okay.
So you can't break any symmetry because symmetries don't even exist. So
the other condition is the locality.
Yeah.
Well, energy sensitive.
You can study Floquet systems, which don't have energy conservation. So that's what Dima did. In fact, your colleague here, maybe you don't know him, but he studied this. Okay, doesn't matter. But.
So there is always a gap in this.
Sorry?
There is always a gap in the thermal entropy on your picture.
In this picture?
Yeah.
This is a jump. I'm saying that if you look at eigenstates,
yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I will come to it in a minute. Mm-hmm. So we are interested in the critical eigenstates. How do they look like? And I want to make some precise statement about it. So let's use the idea of scaling of entanglement. So this is the same idea which goes into for example, C theorems and F theorems, that if you draw small regions, L, then entanglement detects property of the UV fixed point. And obviously, I'm always assuming that L is much, much bigger than the lattice cutoff, but still much, much less than some diverging correlation length. On the other hand, when L is much, much bigger than correlation length, it detects physics of the IR fixed point. So if I'm at the many-body localization transition, then you have, schematically, you have some fixed point for the transition. Let me call it MBL transition. Then one side you have ergodic phase, and other side you have a MBL phase. And let me study this RG flow. So this is UV, this is IR. So, and this is what is unknown. I don't know this value, this is what I'm interested in. What is the physics less than the correlation length? So this is unknown. At long distances, I know what the entanglement looks like. Entanglement of the ergodic phase, as I generally, that was the first part of, earlier part of my talk, entanglement scale, entanglement entropy is thermal entropy. So we know exact answer, just as a counting problem, log of density of states. So let's write down all possible scaling behaviors for the short distance behavior, which I'm interested in, and try to rule them out one by one using some arguments. So one possibility, it could be area law. One possibility is that it could be some curvature is going down, but its curvature is negative, but it's still not constant. One possibility, it's some function which is linear, but whose slope is less than thermal entropy, or it could be linear, but slope more than thermal entropy. And these are actually four exhaustive classes. There is nothing else you can write down because of the work I will, because of the statement I will make later. So let's start from here. So the toolbox I will use is called strong subadditivity of entanglement. That you would look at entanglement of region A1 plus entanglement of A2 minus union minus intersection. That is bigger than or equal to zero. This was first proved in 1973. And let's apply it to some many-body system. You can draw region of length L, A1, and shift A2 by delta L. And you apply this inequality. So S of A1 is SL. S of A2 is also S of L. S of A1 union A2 is SL plus delta L. A1 intersection L minus delta L. Combine this thing. Use your high school algebra. Use second derivative is negative. And I noticed recently there is a paper which actually derives this, but I'm sure it's almost implicit in Cassini-Huerta original paper when they derive C theorem, but it's something maybe many of you have derived in privacy of your rooms, but it's something simple. And then I want to apply, because here I very crucially use the fact that it's a translation invariant system, because I put S of A1 equal to S of A2 equal to S of L. So I'm interested in disordered systems, so let's try to generalize it. So it's a disordered system with some chemical potential. So it turns out when I said entanglement entropy is area law or volume law in a disordered system, I kind of lied to you, because when you have disorder, entanglement entropy scaling is hard to define. If you have some weird chemical potential, if you look at S as a function of L, it will be some weird function. It doesn't have to have any particular functional form. It have all kind of spikes and whatnot. So you have to do some averaging over disorder to define any scaling. So this is the averaging you do, the most sensible averaging. And this is what everyone is working with in the field when I say area law, volume law. So what you do is go to some energy density E, which is what entanglement, you're interested in the entanglement entropy of eigenstates as a function of subsystem size at a given energy density E, which I define as SLE. And look at eigenstates nearby in some small energy window delta E. Sum the entanglement entropy as a function of disorder D, so fixed disorder configuration. Look at the entanglement entropy at that energy E prime. Let me call the nearby states by label E prime. And divide by number of states in that window. So this is this average. Sum all the quantities, divide by how many of them are there. Then multiply by probability distribution function for that disorder. Sum over all disorder configurations. Now you have got rid of the disorder dependence. It's just some number independent of disorder. For a given PD, of course, it depends on what PD is, but it doesn't. Now it's translation invariant. It doesn't. This quantity does not depend on if I make L to L plus delta L. So this is what we, this is what everyone works with, and this is a most sensible way of doing averaging. So I took this quantity, and you can write down inequality of this kind for each, the first line itself. I'm not talking about the second line, just the first line holds for all systems. You can apply to each of these individually, sum all these inequalities, and you find this inequality again. So because if there are many inequalities, let's say A1 is bigger than B1, A2 is bigger than B2, so A1 plus A2 if they are, is bigger than B1 plus B2. So that's what I'm doing. So this is correct, so it holds. So let's apply this inequality to this scenario. So first scenario is ruled out, second derivative has to be negative. This is also ruled out. This is also ruled out. This I have not ruled out. If I rule this out, you might think what I'm talking about then. Everything is over. But actually, you can rule this out. And one thing I have not written, which is the answer. So this you can first rule out based on what is called positivity of relative entropy. So there's some inequality holds for all density matrices which have the same Hilbert space. Let me call it rho 1 and rho 2. Some density matrices. Pick any two density matrices that you've ever seen. As long as they are valid density matrices, they satisfy this inequality. And you can apply this to rule out. You can show that the maximum slope you can have for entanglement entropy is actually thermal entropy density. And it's reminiscent of this Bekenstein bound proof, but it's a bit different. I mean, it's similar flavor, but I'm thinking about eigenstates and eigenstate thermalization and all those things, but it has similar flavor. So, and same inequality, which was used there. I can show you, I can walk you through the proof later if I have time. So I've ruled out everything except one, and that this is the answer, that when you find that the entanglement entropy equals actually thermal entropy even at a critical point, which you will never guess actually, because you're sitting next to ergodic, a many-body localized space where entanglement entropy is area law. I mean, this is the most unnatural answer, and this is the answer. I've not even written down a Hamiltonian field theory, just the strong severity of entanglement. So, it also resolves some of the puzzles which I posed in the beginning. So let's see. So let's approach the transition from the MBL side. So what happens is since I figure out the UV fixed point, so I'm now doing the other way around. I'm going this way. So I know the short distance physics, which is this fixed point. So it goes linear, and when system becomes order correlation length, it crosses over to the area law. So this is 1D, just for illustration. The asymptote here is thermal entropy density time correlation length by the result I just derived, that it's linear. So it's S times correlation length, this asymptote. So the transition is continuous because area law coefficient itself diverges from the MBL side. That's the reason you match up area law and volume law, because area law itself diverges. And this also tells you why this seeming first order transition picture arises, because these limits don't commute. So if you take S divided by L, and first take correlation length to infinity, and then take L to infinity, that does not equal the other possibility. Because depending on whether you make cut here or here, system looks volume law versus thermal. I mean, that's the reason. So I'm working with one of these limits, not the other one, which is more physical. So that's the reason that everything is, it's a second order transition, the diverging correlation length, but it looks first order if you think very lively. So, and you can generalize to higher dimensions by looking at, instead of 1D systems, you can put system on some torus and do the whole construction and again find same answer. So yeah, basically same derivation. And there are consequences. This was a definition of eigenstate thermalization, this breaks down in the many-body localized space. And the conclusion is, at the transition, it still holds. Because, why do I say that? So let's go back to this inequality, that entanglement entropy is less than or equal to thermal entropy. This equality is saturated. It becomes, when this is saturated, then the reduced density matrix is actually thermal, so because of this bound. So when this bound is saturated, when this is equal to zero, then rho 1 and rho 2 are equal. And if I walk you through the proof, what you find is that the thermal entropy becomes entanglement entropy if and only if the reduced density matrix is thermal. If that's the case, then this equation follows. And same thing with, if you know that, then you can also talk about quench experiments at long time behavior. The reduced density matrix for some product state, for example, will look thermal. I'm not talking about how long. It could be much longer than in an ergodic phase. So that's a dynamical question, which I don't answer here. It could be you have to wait much longer. But in the MBL phase, as I mentioned, you can wait even at Poincaré recurrence time. You'll never be hitting there. In this case, it's possible it's much slower. But eventually, it will go there and do this in the at the transition. So how does it, and all those dynamical questions I cannot address by the constraints I have. And there is another possibility. There is an intermediate non-ergodic delocalized phase where the coefficient of volume law is actually less than the thermal entropy density. So this is an interesting scenario because in this case, a transition is actually more conventional. The transition I just described was actually unconventional at some level because at the transition, you fully thermalize. This is very counterintuitive. You might think that there is a transition where you approach from the non-ergodic side, but it's still delocalized. It has volume law coefficient, but the coefficient of volume law goes to zero as you approach transition. So for example, it could be that the entanglement entropy close to a transition looks like L. L is the volume law divided by correlation length as we approach from the delocalized side. So when correlation length diverges, the coefficient of volume law goes to zero. But such phases have never been seen in numerics, or people think they may not even exist because things are moving around. That's why it's volume law, but they are not thermalizing. So, but who knows? No one knows the full class of Hamiltonians or ergodic behavior, all those things. So, and also, could it be first order? We don't know. Can the transition be first order? It's much more exotic, actually, in this case, first order transition than second order. Because first order transitions are not known. There are no first order transition in the eigenstate sense in many body systems, if you think through it. You never have a sudden change in the nature of wave functions. Even in a liquid gas transition, it's not the case. So let me, I don't know, probably I've run out of, I do have 10 minutes, 5 minutes. So maybe I should maybe skip it. But let yeah, I went. So here I'm trying to answer which non-local operators satisfy ETH, which don't. So let me walk through it very quickly. So this is work with Jim Garrison at UCSB. And we are trying to make this equation, we are trying to just understand this equation because it didn't make much sense to me. So there are counterexample. You can write in projection operators which don't satisfy it. So the question is which class of operators satisfy eigenstate thermalization? So let me make a, let's first make a conjecture and try to check it. So let's take the systems, the subsystem size A to be finite and take the infinite system. That is, I take the thermodynamic limit where capital V, total system size goes to infinity, while volume of region A is finite. And let's assume that it holds for all operators in region A, this equation, then you get this equation. There's a reduced density matrix for a single eigenstate equals thermal reduced density matrix. If you assume this holds for all operators. So we try to check this.
But I think it wasn't the original formula only for subsystem operators?
Yeah, but they never specified, if you look at a paper, they talk about few body operators. I don't know what that term means.
I don't know what that means either, but if you can define a subsystem and an environment.
So right, but
I would read that equation to say that the conjecture, the naive conjecture would be that it holds for all O which are purely subsystem operators.
But how big the subsystem can be?
Whatever.
No, but that's the question.
Well, you have an infinite, you have a thermodynamic.
Right, but you can take thermodynamic limit in two ways. You can keep volume A over volume constant and take both of them to infinity. Say non-zero constant.
No, this is a second.
And the other case is you take this to be going to zero.
Yeah.
So the second case is, let me just check this. Even though, I mean, my point is no one has even checked it carefully, as far as I could tell. I've not found a paper where anyone checked even this much more milder thing.
No, I'm not saying anything that I know the answer at all or anyone knows the answer. I'm just saying, what's the logical interpretation of this equation? It seems to me it's your second case.
Yeah, I'm happy with it if you think that's correct. But that's what I'm arguing. But let me give you the brief intuition is that if you do the Schmidt decomposition of the wave functions, eigenstates, the Schmidt vectors in region A look like eigenstates of Hamiltonian region A, while the Schmidt weights look like E2 minus beta A, beta EA. So that's a rough intuition for ETH. So the rare quantum fluctuations of energy in a subsystem allows one to access properties at all energy densities. So if you want to access the properties at, say, temperature beta, you can just raise your reduce density matrix to some power. Suppose you want to access property at temperature beta prime using wave function at temperature beta. So you take the reduced density matrix, raise it to the power beta prime over beta, and normalize it so that race is one. That's a funny part, that you single eigenstate, you can access properties at all temperatures. So if given some Hamiltonian, so that's why this is a strong claim. I mean, that's why, let's say, most people will be surprised by the following statement. If I give you a single eigenstate, that you can determine the properties of system at all temperatures using a single eigenstate. Maybe for you it's obvious, but to me it was surprising. So that's what we try to check. So we look at a spectrum of, so this is a roughly, because I'm doing it a quick version, this is a spectrum of four, there are four things here. I'm plotting spectrum of three density matrices. I mean, log of thermal density matrices, law of single eigenstate density matrix, Hamiltonian region A, and all of those things match pretty well. They're finite size effects, but they match much more than I expected, actually, into the small system. And this is the expectation value of the projected Hamiltonian with respect to Schmidt states. So all those four quantities match. And you can also look at the overlap of vectors. This is the eigenvectors of rho A, this is the Schmidt states, and these eigenvectors of thermal density matrix, they match. You can do this. You can look at a trace norm distance as a function of 1 over L. It seems to go to 0 to that accuracy we can, I mean, to the system sizes we can do. And so, as I mentioned, the consequences, you can do thermodynamics using a single eigenstate, which is pretty crazy, I think. For example, you can get free energy densities at all temperatures using a single eigenstate. So we check those things using Rényi entropy. So it all works out. That's the messages. And you can calculate correlation function using a single eigenstate. So I just took one eigenstate here. Let's just take one eigenstate. And the red curve is the blue curve, the dotted blue curve is the canonical. And the red one is calculated using a single eigenstate. So that's again pretty crazy, I think, that everything works out so well. Of course, there are corrections of order, as I mentioned, exponential minus suppressed in thermal correlation length. So there are always some deviations, but things work really well. So this is the second limit, which you will find more surprising, the other limit, where I take both to infinity while this is held constant. So in this case, this is a question, which non-local operators violate ETH? So let me try to answer it. Can I take 2 minutes? Okay. So you might have seen this curve, it's called Page curve, but it's first derived in 1978 by Lubkin, that entanglement entropy as a function of ratio of volume A over volume, I'm taking both volume A and volume to infinity. So it's called Page curve, that the entanglement entropy has this triangle shape, and thermal entropy keeps growing. Maybe you've seen it, but it's true. Entanglement entropy does not look like thermal entropy when subsystem is bigger than half. So you might have thought this true for all correlation functions. As long as you look at half the system, maybe everything looks thermal, and that's incorrect, it turns out, as I will argue here, it's a simple argument. So let's go back to this intuition that the reduced density matrix looks thermal with the, if ETH is satisfied, that if you can access the whole spectrum as thermal, then the Schmidt coefficients look like E2 minus beta EA. EA is the eigenstates of Hamiltonian region A. And U look like approximate eigenstates of HA, approximate because of the boundary terms. But this has to break down at some point. And when it will break down is when the energy in region A is bigger than total energy. You're bipartitioning total energy into two parts, EA and EA bar. When you have soaked up all the energy in region A, then the region A bar is in its ground state. Going beyond it is actually, when you go beyond it, ETH breaks down. And that's what we find, which makes sense, because you can't have, you can't, what will you do beyond that? You can't satisfy, I mean, I can go through a rigorous argument on that as it is in the paper, but given that I have 2 minutes, but it turns out ETH must break down when energy in region A, what I mean by expectation value Hamiltonian of region A with respect to Schmidt state exceeds the energy E of the eigenstate. E is this, and I'm saying when this exceeds E, ETH breaks down. And that tells you the maximum energy density accessible using a single eigenstate, which is energy density of the original eigenstate divided by F. F is the ratio of volume A to volume. F is just VA over V. So let me just show you. So this is that critical energy density E star, above which the Schmidt eigenvalues don't match at all the thermal Schmidt, the thermal prediction. They deviate pretty sharply beyond this E star. So this is the brown curve, is the E star. E is the energy density of the original eigenstate. So you can go higher. You can go 1 over F higher. Then the, so F is here 1/3. So E is some number. If you divide that, multiply that by 3, you get this line. And this is the ground state. E0 is the ground state. So take this difference, multiply by 3, you end up here. And right there, you see the deviation from ETH. So ETH breaks down for, so ETH will break down when you're trying to access operators, which those operators which access this part of the spectrum, where ETH doesn't work. So the reduced sensing matrix is not thermal, and we want to know which operators get contribution from the non-thermal part. And those are actually Rényi entropies, it turns out. So Rényi entropies, for some critical index n, which is less than 1, violate ETH. So this so-called page curve actually should not hold above, below some critical Rényi index. And you can find that Rényi index, you can do the calculation just using this criteria. For example, for conformal field theories, there is some critical Rényi index you can find out, and some 1/2, 1/(t+1), and that's a prediction. And hopefully this can be checked in holography. I think there is a recent, very nice work by Tom Hartman's group and also by Hopkins group by, Jared Kaplan's group, and they have done some nice work on thinking about entanglement and eigenstate thermal action using holographic methods or even large central charge theories without holography. So all those calculations hopefully can be generalized and try to do Rényi entropies. So far it has not been possible. So that's the, so I will forget about it. Justification for the conjecture, let's just get to the end. So.
I would be the last person to say that entanglement entropy is not interesting physically.
Right.
But I'm thinking about your original part, which really, I guess, wasn't the main point of your talk, but just the statement that there are systems that don't thermalize.
Right.
That you're using entanglement entropy as a...
As
a proxy for thermalization.
And the reason for there's a reason for it, because when entanglement entropy is thermal entropy, as I mentioned, that the inequality is saturated between thermal entropy being less than entanglement entropy being less than thermal entropy, that inequality is saturated, and it's saturated only when the reduced sensing matrix looks thermal. So there is a reason entanglement entropy is a good proxy, because it tells you whether reduced sensing matrix is thermal or not.
Right, you made a good case that it's a proxy, but it's very mathematically sensitive in the sense you can have. I mean, in the, I think most people would believe that even if you had a totally isolated physical system, which started in a pure state, let's say it was not one of these fancy localized, say it was a more traditional kind of system, most people would believe that it in effect becomes thermalizes, even though strictly speaking, the density matrix at every stage is still a pure state. Because you haven't coupled it to an environment.
No, but that's the whole point of this. That if you have some closed system, and you're, it's a pure state which is evolving in time. And now, the way to see the thermalization from my point of view would be to look at a reduced density matrix for a subsystem of this closed system. So it's a closed system, as you mentioned. I look at a small portion, and the thermodynamics emerges.
Right.
That you look at the trace over A bar. That looks like e to the minus beta edge of the system. So that's the point of view I'm taking, in fact.
Yeah, so, right, so okay.
Mm-hmm.
But one small one subsystem you might look at, you might include like a thermometer as a subsystem.
You don't have to do a thermometer. You can just measure correlation functions if you like.
But suppose you really did. What suppose we take one of these that doesn't thermal, by your test does not thermalize.
Right, right.
By common consent, I guess.
Right.
Does not thermalize. And we stuck a thermometer in. What would we expect to see? That the temperature keeps fluctuating?
So it depends on what does it mean to put thermometer. I think the what you'll find is that the temperature is much smaller than what you expect.
Well, that would just say, that could say it just thermalizes to a different temperature.
No, it does not, because the point is that it will depend on
that.
Are
you saying that if you put a thermometer here
and here, all places will be different.
You'll see very, very different.
Exactly, exactly. So that's the idea. That in this case, all points after thermalization time have the same local fluctuations. In a many-body localized space, different parts look very different.
So it's a violation of the
right.
Zero's law or whatever.
Exactly,
law.
Exactly. Yeah.
Any other question? Before anybody disappears, I would like to thank everyone again. But first, let me remind you that he's here until Thursday afternoon. And yeah, you are welcome to come by and talk.